So my subject today is emptiness. Emptiness, what is that? So Nagarjuna, in the, I guess, mythology of early Buddhism, was that he received this Prajnaparamita Sutra that we chant every day. He received the Prajnaparamita from deep down in the sea, from the Nagas, which are sort of snake-like beings that occupy the low, you know, the depths. Fundamentally, he's referring to how he received this from deep down. You might say, okay, let's say the subconscious or before consciousness. It's definitely beyond the Abhidharma, which is this endless citing of the sutras, Buddha's words, said this at this time, and these people were there. And, you know, Abhidharma is just sort of like the oral historic record of Buddha's life and his teachings. But 400 years after Buddha's death, which is Nagarjuna's time, this storyline had become very, very complex, and actually complex in the sense of trying to prove one thing and another, trying to point to the obvious logic of something that is beyond mind. Good luck. And so Buddhism at that time had really become, you might say, a scholarly pursuit and monastic. And one thing that came along from Nagarjuna's contribution was the Mahayana, which is, in a sense, included householders. And it's the great view, the Bodhisattva view of caring for others. Because the ideal of the arhat in the Theravada, in the early Buddhism, was to go to emptiness, to go to complete, what was it called? Someone help me.
Nirvana.
Okay, nirvana, but the arhat.
Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi.
Okay, good. So prajna. Pra means before. Jna is thought, before thinking. And I'm just going to point out a few of the lines within this Heart Sutra to get us rolling, because this is where Nagarjuna actually, you might say, conveyed or left us with this gift of incredible wisdom that we sit here and practice. It says here that Avalokiteshvara, when he's sitting deeply, perceives that all five skandhas are empty. Five skandhas. Five skandhas are components of the separate self. This is what Buddha delineated as, okay, here's the pieces that we assemble together to make sense of this. And he's saying, that which is form is emptiness, that which is emptiness, form, and the same is true of feelings and perceptions and impulses and consciousness, all of the five skandhas, that they're all the display of emptiness itself. And it's a little bit like a computer screen. If you watch a movie or have a Zoom conversation with someone on the computer screen, all kinds of things appear there. People, events, objects, Google, the internet. But in fact, it's all screen. It's just screen. It's just empty. In the sense of that screen becomes whatever is being displayed on the screen. But it's all just screen. It's never anything other than screen. So again, form is emptiness. Emptiness, the screen, is form. So that's one way to kind of wrap your head around it. And so it's also to say, therefore, in emptiness, no form, no feeling, perception, impulses, consciousness. Basically, this is pointing to that the five skandhas, which are the pieces of the puzzle that we are, what we're made up of, are dependently arising phenomena. They're not self-existing, they're dependently arising. They depend, one thing depends upon another, causes and conditions. So this may seem distant and quite obscure to imagine that everything we experience and everything we are somehow is, in some form, we could say, we're saying empty. So Dalai Lama had this wonderful little quote that helps to clarify for us. Dalai Lama says, the existence of things is not in dispute. It is the manner in which they exist that must be clarified. The manner in which they exist that must be clarified. Because our usual understanding, our usual, you might say, our experience, is that it's real, you know, it's like real. And yes, these things exist, but not in the manner in which we believe. Their existence itself is not in dispute. So what is emptiness? Empty of what?
Abiding self-nature.
All right, okay, but not, I'm not supposed to draw any comments from the audience. Thank you very much. I was told to just speak and not question anyone. But what is emptiness? Empty of self. Empty of separation. This, that one. Okay? Empty of separation. Empty of struggle and effort and thinking. Struggle, effort, and thinking. This is what I call the me project. The me project. Sustaining this actually. Promoting and sustaining this. This me project. Emptiness is without any of that. Empty of intention, strategy. Empty of any identity. Emptiness is empty of any identity. It's not personal. Simply not personal. It's not mine or yours. And it doesn't define me or you. Not personal. So, what is empty of all those aspects? All that struggle. All those five skandhas. All the qualities and distinctions that make up I, that make up me. What is not personal? So just hang with that for a minute. What is not personal? Being. Being. Simply being. Okay, I don't want to be abstract. In the immediacy of experiencing, in perception itself, hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, yeah? In the immediacy of experience itself, in perception itself, there is no implied observer. Get close to that. No implied observer. In the first moment of experience, before, you know, seventh consciousness comes in and makes comments and said, this is for or against me, this is all this this means this, this means that, before any of that, in the immediacy, just now, of experiencing anything, there's no innate or implied observer. No innate doer. Like everything we see here doesn't need our help to appear to our visual consciousness, form and color. Doesn't need our help. There's no doer. It's the isness of things, being. No reference point. Like seeing it from here, in that first instant, in the immediacy of perception, okay? No reference point. Again, no self. No self. Not you, you, none of us. No self. And emptiness is the spontaneously arisen, timeless immediacy of now. Present moment. Now. Just now. And now. And now. Is completely intimate. It's in this room now. We're never apart from it now, ever. Very intimate, extremely intimate. This is the genius of Nagarjuna, that he recognized this. He set aside all the storyline, all the arguments for, you know, the logic of this, and directly experienced, thanks to the Nagas, deep down in the ocean, deep in consciousness, okay, the immediacy of this, and that it's not personal. Oh, Buddha was right, no self, okay. But usually we sort of take that as, I don't know, a rule of Buddhism, or in some way trying to understand it conceptually, and it's not accessible that way. The reality of no self is not accessible through thinking, the reality of it. We can give all kinds of reasons, and actually I think Abhidharma probably addresses it a bunch, but it didn't seem to help those monks find nirvana. Maybe a few here and there. So it's fresh. This emptiness is fresh. And it's before thinking. Before thinking. Before wanting, making, checking, holding, right? Those four walls that are kind of the claustrophobic closet we live within. Wanting, making, checking, holding. Just now, just here, just this. So, in this ongoingness of, we could say, self-existing presence, we didn't make it, it doesn't need our help to exist, the ongoingness of self-existing presence, is the self-existing presence of all things, centerless, all-pervasive, infinite being. Again, Dalai Lama, the existence of things is not in dispute. It is the manner in which they exist that must be clarified. What we call samsara, suffering, in fact, is the struggle to sustain, protect, and promote this me. It's a big project, the me project. It's like day to day, moment to moment. Our whole lives, the sense of struggle, of having to push, of having to somehow secure and assure ourselves that, okay, I'm here, I belong, this is me, these are my things. I can compete with those people, but that one's better than me. Or how can I get more money, or how can I have more power? The struggle to sustain, protect, and promote this me. It takes a lot of effort. I mean, it's exhausting. It's exhausting. So, effortlessness is the gate of liberation from the apparent doer. Effortlessness. Can you imagine making, just for a moment, no effort whatsoever? No push. No reach. Effortlessness. We can recognize this in some way in that immediacy of perception. How much effort is involved for each of you in hearing that plane? You don't have to reach for it. It's not a struggle. It just arrives within the effortlessness of being. We are experiencing beings. We have perception. It's a gift. No struggle. That's some sense of effortlessness. Or for instance, the plane's coming closer. What is the flavor of your tongue? Check it. Likely no flavor, unless someone's cheating and sucking on a lifesaver. There's no flavor there. It's empty. And yet, there's a capacity to taste sugar, sweet, salty, hot, sour, in the field of the empty perception of taste, like on the empty screen of the computer, that things appear in the same way. All of this appears within emptiness. The subject of the day is emptiness. It's ongoing. So to say effortlessness is the gate of liberation from the apparent doer, we don't have to make a big deal of staying alive, of hearing, of smelling, tasting, touching. This effortlessness rests at the core of this moment. Just right here. This is moment world. We call it moment world. Right? All the way around the circle. Which is not inside of or outside of any place. It's always here. Moment world is always here. Yes? Here. Now. You know, Ram Dass was on to something. Be here now. Be here now. Moment world. It's always here. It's always now. And it's, we could say, centerless, self-existing. It's just what's occurring. What's occurring? What's being experienced? And moment world is ongoing. That there's no separation between all apparent things. Hand, arm, elbow, lectern, floor. Without inside and outside, just moment world. Moment world, the experience of moment world, occurs within the effortless immediacy of perception itself. tasting, smelling, touching, feeling, hearing. So we're like this incredible, effortless capacity to receive and experience the body, the mind, and the world. This is a capacity. It's not the result of our effort. It's not the result of our Zen training. It's not the result of anything that we've done. We're born with this. We're born with this. So a moment world occurs within this effortless immediacy of perception itself. Effortlessness, now here we go, is the release from attention into awareness. Attention, awareness. They're different. Insight into emptiness, which is what we're talking about, is not conceptual, but experiential, directly experiential. Awareness. It's like the empty mirror of mind. That's why I use this mirror a lot. It really points to something. It's a wonderful metaphor. Anything can appear in the mirror. We could say, the mirror makes no effort. We could also say, the mirror has no preference. Whatever comes before it is reflected. And the reflectancy, the image that appears in the mirror, never departs from this very moment. Just now. It only reflects now. This mirror cannot reflect a moment ago or 3 seconds from now. Cannot. The empty being, emptiness itself, which we are, never departs from now. We're never anywhere other than here now. It seems simple, but it's so chronically, perpetually overlooked. We're home. We're home. Hey, kids, we're home. Here, now. And the way we could say mirror of mind, or mirror of our being, our capacity to experience, that mirror never leaves this moment. We're never going somewhere else. This is the whole sales pitch on mindfulness, which is like becoming pervasive in psychology, actually all kinds of different areas. Everyone's saying, mindfulness, mindfulness. Like, you know, come back and be where your experience occurs. Have your body and mind at the same place at the same time. Don't be lost in anticipation, adrift in memory. Be here. Be where life occurs. Be where you can actually have a spontaneous response to moment world. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, it's so obvious. But we don't do that. So we have to come here and put in 9 days, you see? This is our this is our training. This is what we do here. We just sit here. We stop and we sit. Why? It's simple. Our schedule is so wonderful in the way we train. Yong Ming Zhang Jin. What is it? Leap like a tiger while sitting. Get it, right? Be like not complacent, not asleep, leap like a tiger into emptiness, okay? Just this empty moment, into effortlessness. Okay, the empty mirror of mind. So I want to go a little further into this distinction between attention and awareness. And this will make it a little more clear, better than an idea. I'm going to speak to actually experience of attention and the experience all of us have of awareness. And this is actually called, classically, separating milk from water. You know, a swan can do that. Separating milk from water. It's intriguing, isn't it? So, in comparison, attention is focused and fixated on objects of perception, right? Watch your breath. Look at the floor. Awareness is just pervasive. It's open, open lucidity, effortless. Attention is a thinking function. It's establishing an observer, and this is the downside of mindfulness. It so powerfully establishes this observer who is mindful, this observer. Awareness is impersonal intelligence, an impersonal intelligence prior to thought. An intelligence prior to thought. You have that. Sometimes we've tasted as intuition. Attention is effortful. We try and concentrate. Awareness is effortless. It's unwavering. It's spontaneously present. We don't make it happen. It's happening already. It's what we are. It's what we are. Attention is colored by emotions. We're vigilant. We're grasping. We've got a survival focus. The amygdala is flooding us with these hormones that make us like, am I safe? Am I not safe? That's the sense of attention. Awareness is just an impersonal, clear mirror without preference and therefore fearless. Fearless. Leap like a tiger while sitting. Fearless. Okay? Attention is unstable, scattered, sporadic. I'm sure any of us can attest to that. Scattered and unstable. Awareness is continuously effortless. It's a stable presence, the sense of presence. There's never a moment all day long, and actually if we were really well developed, probably through the night, where experience ceases. It doesn't cease. We're always experiencing, right? Attention is time-bound. We pay attention to the past, a little to the present, and we pay attention to the future. There's that sense of time, past, present, future. But awareness is timeless before all constructs of time. Eternally present as nowness. Nowness. Awareness is the flavor of nowness. Attention is anchored to the six senses. You know? What do you hear? What do you smell? What do you see? Our attention is through one of those avenues. But awareness is the space in which all sense perception arises. The basic space of phenomena. The universal computer screen upon which everything appears. We say sometimes all the display of awareness. It's like that computer screen. And remember, the screen No matter what appears, it's still just screen. It's still just empty. Empty. Attention is cultivated as a meditative state of calm or insight, shamatha or vipassana, right? But awareness is recognized as innately self-existing. It's not cultivated, okay? It's innately self-existing, spontaneously present. It's not a state of consciousness. It's not a result of meditation. And the, you might say, cultivation of awareness is actually not a meditative process, not meditative. It is a process of familiarization. It's happening all the time. We don't notice. It's a process of familiarization. So that's what awareness is. You get some feel for that. So again, back to Nagarjuna and winding up with the Prajnaparamita Sutra. It says here, far apart from every perverted view. So we've been talking about how our view becomes perverted, confused, misdirected. But far apart from every perverted view, one dwells in nirvana. What is that far apart? It's resting in don't know. We call it don't know. Tsingtsan pointed to that. Actually, someone asked him one time, what is your teaching? What are you teach so broadly to so many people. He says, I only teach one thing. What's that? Don't know. I only teach don't know. Why? Why? That's the core of it. That's the core. The key teaching. So, thousands and thousands of times he hammered us with, don't know mind, only go straight don't know. Only keep don't know. Just do it. Keep don't know. So, the Prajnaparamita mantra at the end. And that mantra refers to prior to all beginnings, beyond mind. It's actually, again, don't know, pointing to beyond mind. It says, gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhiswaha. Gone. Gone. Gone beyond. Completely gone beyond. Just this.